Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Leading Edge Love Radio. This is your host, Sumati Sparks, the Open Relationship Coach at sumatisparks.com. And today I'm really excited to have on my show a wonderful creative person named Rachel Ricard. And Rachel is passionate about relating and loving in alternative ways and helping people find and live their truth for the way they want to love and be loved. Rachel was featured on Showtime's hit docuseries, Polyamory, Married and Dating. Rachel travels the world facilitating and hosting workshops, retreats, and festivals with her partner through their business, Embodied Intimacy. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Hi, Sumati. Thank you so much for having me on today.
You're welcome. So before we get into the main reason why I asked you to be on, I want to find out a little bit more about you personally. So can you tell us your story a little bit about how you became non-monogamous or what labels do you use?
Great. It's a really fun story that I love to tell. I went back to school to get my master's to be a sex therapist. And through the process of the major overhaul of your own psychology that is going back to be a therapist, I went through some human sexuality classes, and I went through a phase where I really needed to own my attraction to women. And through this ownership and this newfound liberation, I'll call it, of publicly coming out, I came out very strongly, and I came out as a lesbian. And it was a phase I really needed to go through. And what happened was I had an ex-boyfriend come in town about a year into my term as a lesbian, we'll all say, and I realized I wasn't a lesbian. I realized when my ex-boyfriend came in town that I was still attracted to men, and specifically him, and so I am still attracted to men and women. And in that, what happened was a lot of the lesbian community that I had come into was really threatened by coming out as a bisexual. And so I went through a big process of not knowing where I belonged. If I was dating a woman, I was a lesbian. But if I was dating a man, I was straight. And I didn't really identify with either of those titles. I was really, really confident in my bisexuality. So really shortly around that time, a friend mentioned to me, do you know there's this thing called polyamory and you can be with multiple people at the same time? And it was like the heavens shone down and there was a way for me. And so I started researching everything I could about polyamory and looking for a community near where I lived. And it was really difficult for me at that time because there wasn't so much out there. So the beginning of my polyamorous lifestyle change looked like me trying to convert a lot of my monogamous friends and telling them there's this thing we can do and it's so amazing. And it turned out I really needed a community. So I went on the search for a community. And at that time I was a polyamorous activist for polyamory. Since then I've transitioned and now I mostly use the term I'm open or in an open relationship because for me, saying the word polyamory means it means I actively have more than one relationship right now. And that's not always true. Sometimes I have more than one relationship. Sometimes I'm in just one relationship with my partner and we have lovers, but I just like the term open. It felt more free to me and not like another box that I was just fitting in. So I use open.
Got it. Okay, great. Thank you so much for sharing about that, Rachel. And right now, is your business partner also your life partner?
That's correct, yes.
Uh-huh. And what kind of relationship do you guys have?
We have an open relationship where we're primary.
Okay, so you do use the term primary. You consider yourselves primary partners?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, cool. Yes, there's this whole movement of, you know, relationship anarchy or free agency where people don't have a hierarchy. And there's just so many different ways to do non-monogamy. So that's what I thought would be such an interesting topic to have you on the show. So let's go into talking about your video.
Yeah, yeah. If I can, I'll say one more thing on that too, which is just that there are so many different ways of doing non-monogamy, and for me, what has really worked, like it would be really hard for me to go from the paradigm of monogamy right into relationship anarchy. I love relationship anarchy, and I wish I was there now, and unfortunately I'm not. But what has really worked for me is taking little stepping stones along the way as I'm opening up and becoming more secure in my partnership and in myself as a woman. So I usually advise people to take those small steps, because the cultural norms and the paradigms that we're living in are so strong that it's really scary and really hard for people to go right from, you know, monogamy and to step right into relationship anarchy.
Right, right. Yeah, and people are wired differently too. Some people can go right into that because they never really fit into the model of primary partnership. Just like you said, you felt like the heavens rained down on you when you learned that polyamory existed. Other people might feel that way when they learn that relationship anarchy exists. So
exactly.
We have to honor
great point.
Kind of like how we're wired. Yeah.
Yeah,
beautiful.
That's great.
Okay.
That's great.
Yeah. So the reason why I asked Rachel to be on my show was because she, for our listeners, she posted what I considered a very beautiful, vulnerable video on Facebook, and at last count, it had 37,000 views, over 550 likes, 140 comments, and that was just the original post. I know that it got shared multiple times, and in one place that it got shared on a sex-positive women's Facebook group, there were 87 more comments on that.
So,
it became quite the viral video and quite controversial. So congratulations first of all, for, you know, putting yourself out there that way. And, you know, I know it's not easy we don't always have such thick skin to get those kinds of comments back. So first of all, congratulations just for putting yourself out there that way.
Yes. Thank you. You never know which videos are going to pick up speed or be received in the way that they are. And I wish I knew ahead of time, because I maybe would be more thoughtful about it. But one of the ways that I make videos is just from this very spontaneous, passionate place. I don't really pre-plan videos or script them or structure them. So sometimes my speech can look very sloppy.
I appreciated that exact thing about you, because after I asked you to be on the show and I was learning about you and saw the name of your business was Embodied Intimacy, I went back and watched the video and I really saw how you were practicing that. You were being embodied and just sharing what was true in your body. So I saw that you were actually practicing what you preach.
Thank you so much for noticing that and for reflecting that back. It feels good.
Yeah. So what Rachel's video was about, it was about what she perceives sometimes from other people and what she has experienced in the past in herself as a lack of sensitivity among women who are openly relating. Now, as we said earlier, everybody has different ways of doing open relationship, and she was just talking about her own experience and what she craves. And what she craves is when she's dating someone who's in another primary partnership, if she's dating a man and he has a primary partner, she likes to check in with the other woman, which we call the metamour. She likes to check in with the metamour and just acknowledge that, you know, hey, I'm being intimate with your partner, even if it's just flirting, dating, or all the way to a full sexual relationship, to just honor that other woman who also is bonded with that man. And she likes it when other women do that for her too. If another woman is dating her primary partner, Rachel likes it when they check in and just acknowledge it. And a little goes a long way, just an acknowledgement, like, hey, I see you. You know, thank you for the freedom to, you know, for me to be with your partner. Any kind of, the words don't matter as much as the heart that's in it. So that's what I got from your video, is that you love that, and that it builds more love in the community overall, and that we can all reach greater heights of love than we can just on our own. And that's one of the things that you feel polyamory is about. So did I summarize that? Is there anything else you want to add about the video itself?
No, I think you just summarized it like so beautifully. You summarized it maybe better than I could. That was exactly the place that I was coming from, and I assume we'll deconstruct it a little bit more here, because I am aware that after, you know, seeing a lot of the comments and reflections, that I'm also speaking from a specific place of where I'm coming from, and there might be people who don't know me or who don't know my lifestyle to know what inspired some of that passion.
Right, and you said in your video, we are all pioneers, we are all figuring it out as we go along. So that's why I have this show, and that's why we're all talking about this, because there is no one textbook for open relationship. Every single person who practices it does it in their own unique way. So that being said, what I got, the essence of what I got from your video is, what if we created a strong sisterhood so that we wanted to gift our sisters with our partners? And I know, I'll just be vulnerable myself, and I've experienced that in the past, where if a woman was dating my primary partner, all I needed from her was to say, hey, I'll slow down if you want me to, or I won't date him if that doesn't work for you. And if she was just even willing to say that or do that, I would have been more likely to say, no, it's okay, go ahead. Just knowing that you'd be willing to do that makes me want to gift you with with my partner. So call me insecure, but that's how I was in the past. I just needed my sister to have my back and to kind of prioritize our relationship over the man. You know, yes, I'm a heterosexual woman primarily, and, you know, yes, I probably fit into that heteronormative box, and I apologize to those that don't, but I think that's why I resonated with your video so much, because I do feel like I can share my partner so much easier when I feel like the woman is my sister.
Exactly. And you're not the only woman. There's at least like 1,000 other women who've interacted with my video in some shape or form that wholeheartedly agree with what you've just shared and feel very much the same.
Right. So one of the comments that I just made were actually one of the criticisms that you got on the video, which was, this woman sounds really insecure. And there was kind of a lot of judgment about, you're not, you know, I didn't say this, but you know, we all feel insecurity and jealousy, and we just learn to manage it, and we are where we are. We can't force ourselves to be more evolved than we are. It's just where we are. So so tell me how you would respond to that criticism of like, that's really insecure that you need that.
Yeah. You know, I have this practice now, especially since I've been doing these videos, when someone says something like this, I really try to try it on and to like really see what there is that's here that's valuable for me to look at about myself and about maybe a shadow that someone's seeing that I'm not yet aware of. And sure, I'm guilty of having insecurities. I am insecure around some particular women and some not at all. And what I've found in, you know, there's a lot of varying different types of women who interact with my partner and me. And one of the fastest ways for me to be insecure is for the other woman to be, one, single, two, looking to be met in partnership, three, interested in my partner, and four, not in any kind of communication with me. Like, that is the cocktail that breeds my insecurity. And so I know that. And so I either take the steps that I need to reach out and connect with that woman, or, you know, or the second layer is my partner says to her, you know, he makes a connection between the two of us, and this is the third piece, which is where this video is inspired from, that it's actually so rare that the woman reaches out on her own to me and just says mm-hmm. anything, which is what breeds more of that insecurity. And where the other thing that is kind of unfolded for me in this magnifying glass on sisterhood and sharing or relating with the same man. When I have women's circles when I do women's work, there are so many women who are terrified to come to a women's circle because of their childhood trauma from growing up with women who were mean and competitive. And this mm-hmm. is something that inherently exists in our sisterhood. And so I noticed that this carries over into the open relating territory, where there is this this shadow of competition and competing for men.
Mm-hmm.
And by just reaching out and creating that connection, I noticed that competition, that secrecy, that there's this energy, like it's that cheating energy that we're so accustomed to, that I find is still a kind of a fuel that's there, where it's like being in that secrecy and having my privacy for my relationship is more comfortable than communicating the uncomfortableness of what needs to be communicated to create a connection.
Right. Beautiful. Well put, Rachel.
And that's really what I'm trying to get through. That's really what I'm trying to shine a light on. It can be my own insecurity, and yeah, they do show up, and yeah, I do have them, but it's also like, it's also something much deeper and darker that exists between women, and I think it also exists between men from what I've, the responses I've gotten back as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So here's another criticism that you got, and tell me what you would say to this. So where's the partner in all this? Isn't it his job to communicate relationship agreements, including expectations, hopes, and needs about communication to new partners?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so my partner does communicate that, and sometimes even when he communicates it, the woman still doesn't reach out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, part of also the video, when I made the video, so my partner and I, like I said, we travel and we teach workshops and we go to retreats and festivals. So a lot of times when he goes on dates, he's meeting the women that he goes on dates with, where we're all sharing the same physical space together.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's probably not normal for many people at home who are practicing poly, where their partner is like away from them and meets someone and then schedules a date and it's separate. But for me, my partner mm-hmm. and I spend a lot of time together. And so when mm-hmm. he goes on physical dates with people, a lot of time, there is many times where I'm sharing the same space as them. And one of the threads of passion that this video was inspired by was that I could be sharing a space with a woman who was negotiating dating my partner, and her and I were sharing space, and yet we have never even had a conversation. And that felt mm-hmm. really off to me. So sometimes it's that my partner also hasn't even had a chance to communicate to her because the timing isn't always right. You know, he usually communicates once he's already on the date with the woman or when the date's coming over, like, hey, it's been really great being with you, and I know my partner Rachel would really love to connect with you or to have some kind of connection, and he does communicate that.
Mhm. Mhm. Beautiful. Yeah. And that's a good segue into another criticism, that sometimes it's just not practical or wanted to connect with the metamor. And this person who's writing it sounds like they have only ever been a secondary in open relationships. They've never had a primary. So they talk about the concept of couples privilege. And I can relate to that personally because I was in a 5-year relationship with someone who was married and poly, and I didn't really consider myself a secondary for much of the relationship. I was just a different kind of partner. He had a nesting partner, and I was another kind of partner. I don't know what to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But I did feel like I had less power, so that when his relationship with his wife got closer again toward the end of the relationship, I didn't have much of a say in how much connection I got to have with her. I had to sort of take it or leave it, and I left it because mm-hmm. it wasn't enough connection for me. So so how would you respond to somebody who talks about, quote, couples privilege, and how would people who are secondaries get this need met that you're talking about of sisterhood?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with the first part, which is the couples. I also can very much relate to this. I also couple for or well, I did date. It's a hard line. I shared a bed with a married couple for 2 years, where I mostly had the romantic connection with the man and the sexual connection with the man, but I had a very deep emotional connection with the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about them, Michael and Kamala Devi, and they had a at the time a 12-year marriage. So there was definitely a couple's privilege, and they have a son together and a house. So there was definitely a couple's privilege, and I think that does exist, and I think that's totally normal. And I think as a secondary, I knew what I was getting myself into, and when I entered into the relationship, provide me. And I think one of the things that does happen over time, especially when I became more and more intimate and more bonded and attached in the relationship, was I did want more. And, you know, with poly, when you're dating a couple, you're entering an ecosystem. And
Rachel, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you're kind of you're cutting in and out a little bit. I don't know if there's a better place you can move to.
How about now?
Okay, that's fine. I'll let you know if you cut out again. Go ahead.
You hear me?
No, you cut out again there. I'm sorry.
And then.
Oh, that's too bad.
Stabilized.
Yeah. Okay, try talking again now. I still can't hear you.
Oh, no.
Okay, I can hear you now.
You can hear me now?
Yes. Yeah, I'm afraid it's cutting in and out.
Hello?
Okay, now that's good.
That's good. Okay, so it's stable now?
Yes. Much better.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
I apologize. I'm just trying to pick up where I left off. So, yes. So when you're entering a poly relationship as someone who's dating a couple, for me, unless everyone is agreeing and you're moving more towards that paradigm of relationship anarchy, the previously existing relationships, and this can also be called hierarchy, are an existing ecosystem. And what feels best in my heart is that existing ecosystem is honored, and that if anything is happening in the secondary relationships or third or lovers relationships, that they're honoring the existing ecosystem. So you can't put a new plant in an ecosystem if it's going to kill the entire ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So I do understand that there is couples privilege, and for me, that's just part of the game. Until, you know, but that's part of the game for me and the game I'm playing with my particular partner at this point in time. I can see that if we're together many more years and we continue our evolution and growth in this type of relating, that we'll get to a place that's more anarchy and there's more freedom and there's more space to invite new people in where we have an established connection and where they're growing with us.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's
right.
an existing relationship that's multiple years old that has a history, it makes sense to me that that has some level of privilege, especially depending on, like, my partner and I have a business together, or if we had a child together. You know, those things that there's more invested in that relationship, so it makes sense to me that there's a more privilege, for
mm-hmm.
for better or worse. That's how it occurs to me right now. And I know there's
right.
probably very many people who are very angry that I'm saying that.
Well, I feel you're acknowledging what is, and like you said, until we get to the point where we're all relationship anarchists, we have to acknowledge where we are in our journey. And it just takes, you know, being in our heart and having the lines of communication open.
Exactly. Beautiful.
And Rachel, I really appreciate you sharing so honestly, especially at the beginning of your video, about your relationship with Kamala Devi and Michael. I watched that show and I wondered what happened afterwards. I have to be honest. I was kind of like, that's so cool that she's talking about it in her video. So I'm glad to hear that you have had some healing about it. So for those of you that don't know, she bared her soul on a Showtime series where she joined into a relationship with a pre-existing married couple. And the whole world got to watch, and then I guess it ended. So maybe you can share with us what you would have done differently now that you've had this time to reflect on it.
Oh yeah, gosh, I would do so many things differently. I was actually just with Michael and Kamala Devi. My partner and I, our home base is in Sweden, and there's the world's largest Tantra festival every summer is there, and Michael and Kamala Devi came this summer, and so we spent a week with them in Sweden just a few weeks ago, and our relationship has gone through so many layers of healing over the last 3 years. We had a really difficult we had a really difficult breakup. I think that the element of sisterhood that I'm talking about in this message is very much part of that. I had never had a primary partnership that I shared to the extent to which I'm you know, sharing. I guess I'll say that word, although it's really hard for me to say it now since I've had so much backlash from it. I'm trying to think of a new word, and if anyone has one, I'm super open to it. But
mm-hmm.
I was open for my partner, the way that Kamala Devi had shared, I'll say, Michael with me. And so I just didn't have any awareness at that time of what it was like for her, and going through a phase of really struggling. And her and Michael's relationship went into a wobble, and Michael and I's relationship was really intensifying, and we were falling deeper and deeper in love very fast, way faster than the ecosystem, so to speak, could handle it. And
mm-hmm.
And Michael and I were just kind of, we were high on love drugs, and we were insensitive, and we weren't able to slow down in a way that relaxed Kamala Devi's nervous system enough, and she was like, she was super activated by us, and it just got to the place where she had, I think, also overstepped a lot of her own personal boundaries, because Michael, as she says, was that one of the happiest she's ever seen him when he and I were together.
Mm.
Partner. And I think that's a very common thing that happens for us. We're open in this way because we want our partner's happiness so much. And sometimes we want it more than we want our own happiness, and we kind of cross our own personal boundaries for our partner to have the life that they desire. And So it got to the place where her and Michael's relationship and their family there was at a breaking point. And so when it got to that breaking point, Kamala Devi basically said that I had to move out and that Michael and I couldn't. And that was the way that it ended. And I went through the dark night of my soul at that time because I had really invested my entire life in the community in San Diego and in our what's called like a super pod or a pod of family that was living and relating together. And so when I wasn't included anymore in that, it was, like I said, the dark night of my soul. I went down pretty hard and went through a total life reassessment.
Well, that must have been really painful. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, it was extremely painful and hard. And I, you know, I think I swore off polyamory for a little while after that.
Right. I can see that. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Leading Edge Love Radio. This is your host, Sumati Sparks, the Open Relationship Coach at sumatisparks.com. We're speaking with Rachel Ricards. Ricards or Ricards? Am I pronouncing that right?
You can say, yeah, I say Ricards. But Ricards is probably right.
Okay.
It's French. Yeah.
Ricards. Okay, great. And Rachel's sharing so vulnerably with us about some of her past mistakes in polyamory. And we're talking about a viral video that she posted on Facebook. And one of the things that you brought up was the topic of, quote, sharing my partner. And that was one of the controversies in your video. And I actually commented on that as well because I feel like, you know, if sharing my partner puts a bad taste in people's mouth, what new phrase can we use that reflects that feeling that occurs when I bond with someone sexually, emotionally, spiritually, in every way, and they feel like my sweetie? I introduce my lovers as my sweeties, and so I know that sounds really possessive, but there is a feeling in my body that I've bonded with this person. There's a piece of my heart that I've shared with them and he's shared with me. And so how do we convey that, the reality of how that feels, without making it sound like we own people or it's you know, my job to tell you when you can be with someone else. Have you had any further thoughts about that?
Yeah, actually my partner and I were talking about it. You know, we were under the impression that it was the word, that it wasn't as much the word sharing as it was the word my, like that this person is mine. And so when we were speaking about it and I was like, you know, what phrase or word do I use? Because when I say it, it doesn't feel possessive to me. You know, I don't feel like in no way what was projected on me in that video. None of that really feels true for me. So there's obviously a semantic.
Whoops, but, you're cutting in and out again, hon.
Oh, no. I should be fine.
Okay, go ahead.
Is it okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. That it was, so what we boiled it down to was that it might be more accurate for me to say, to share our love.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of share my partner, to share our love, because he and me are a we. There is a third element here that is the relationship, and that is what is open or free to be shared or for others to be invited in. He doesn't in this way. We don't exist separately. When someone is with me, they're with him as well. So what felt better for us as we were kind of trying to deconstruct this was to say that we were sharing our love, and that made it maybe feel less possessive. I'm not sure, I guess it doesn't resonate with me. So it's hard for me because when I try to start deconstructing it, I feel like I'm being defensive and I don't at the same time feel I have anything to be defensive about.
Right. I feel that, you know? Yeah. Cool, thank you. So, yeah, we'll have to just be open. I know that non-monogamous people have invented a lot of words over the years, such as compersion and so forth. So we'll just have to come up with a new word that conveys that feeling without it sounding possessive. So we'll be open to the universe for a download for a new word.
Yes, I'm very open to it. And like I said, I just have sadness that was that when people watched my video, that was the taste that they were left with of this mm-hmm. possessiveness. Because mm-hmm. I don't know. For me, it's a very interesting dilemma in calling someone who's in an open relationship possessive.
mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Right. There's got to be some degree of lack of possession to even be doing that in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Well,
exactly.
Here's another
yeah.
comment. So here's another comment. I've been in too many situations where I'm expected to have a relationship with the metamor, but my own wants and needs are ignored. The choice was made for me before I was even in their lives, and I was expected to just fall into step with it. So this person
Great.
Is feeling like they don't want to be forced to connect with the metamor.
Right.
So what would you say to that?
Yeah, so I don't know if you've dropped on your show previously, but there's a book called More Than Two that I just love,
mm-hmm.
and I can't stop reading it again. And that
yeah,
book is very much written from the relationship anarchy perspective. And mm-hmm. there's a beautiful distinction they make between rules and agreements, where mm-hmm. rules and relationships are something that's made that is kind of a rule that's set in place where not everyone has agreed to it. And the distinction between that and an agreement is that each person who's involved in the relationship has agreed to this way of being together. So if a couple has some kind of an agreement, when a new person is added into that relationship, that person is included then, and they get to have their say if that agreement works for them or if they have a change they'd like to make. And that's what creates the distinction between a rule and an agreement. So, so for this, I'd say, again, it's like, it's so easy for me with all of these questions that we're all just different in the way that we like to be related with and treated. And it's about finding the people who match your style. You know, it's about, like my dear friend and lover and teacher, Reed Mahalko, says, date your species. Like, date the people
mm-hmm.
who want to relate and be related with the way that fits the shape of your heart. And for me, that's really
mm-hmm.
simple. Like, that's what it comes down to. And just communicating all the expectations and if there are agreements or rules ahead of time. And then there's choice if that works for you or if that doesn't. And it feels very simple to me in that way. The hard part is, when you don't know what you want or what your boundaries are, or what feels good for you, then it gets really foggy and unclear. But as long as you have you're aware of your sense of self and what will work for you in relationship and what's a yes and what's a no, I love that people have rules and agreements and things that they know works for them. Like, thank you for showing me how to love you better.
Mhm. Yeah, thank you. And so another comment someone made, and this, your answer may be the same for this as for the last one. This is a little harsh, I think. This person says, having more love circulating back and experiencing superior levels of love, in quotes, may be what she's in poly for, but I think it's nonsense and I can't help her with that. And they're talking about having to buy into your worldview. It's not my job to give her superior levels of love. Even if I'm dating her partner, she thought it was a manipulation.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess she's just not someone who, you know, who... who there'd be much compatibility with between her and I. And yet,
right.
I have, like, for me, there's so much space for other people's ways of relating. I feel a lot of space in my heart for someone who doesn't agree with me, and for someone who's more in an anarchy paradigm, or in a paradigm where they don't want communication or connection between metamors and lovers. Like that mm-hmm. feels great for me. I'm not challenging that, but I'm simply saying this is how I relate with others, and I relate with others in this way because it feels good to me to both give and receive this type of connection. And so this is another one of those things that more than two breaks down really well, which is like what kind of like poly constellation do you want? What fits the shape of your heart? Do you want to be closely connected or not to lovers? And there's sometimes where my partner goes on a date with someone and that person doesn't want a connection with me, or I don't want a connection with that person, or it's just not natural and it never happens. And that's fine. There's no, mm-hmm. There's nothing in me that says that's trying to control that from not happening. I'm just simply saying it feels really fucking good when it does happen.
When it does circulate
back through.
Right,
it changes everything. It changes everything for me. It makes it a really beautiful opening experience. And that's what I want. And maybe in 10 years, I'm not going to want that. Maybe my partner mm-hmm. and I, if we're still together then, maybe he does have more relationships where there is no connection between me and the other women. But even when, you know, it's funny, when I was just at Burning Man, I spoke to a woman who's in a long-term relationship, and she saw my video, and she and her partner are doing a very high level of poly. And she even said the same thing to me. Your video was spot on, especially when I'm sharing space with another woman and she's either just, you know, slept with my husband or getting ready to go on a date with him. If she just acknowledges me, it really changes everything for me.
Mm-hmm,
and I
mm-hmm,
think that's
right.
That's the context that I want people to have in with my video, is that like the primary piece that I was also speaking into was that I'm sharing space with a lot of these women who are dating my partner, where we're at the mm-hmm. same retreat or festival, or we're in the same time and place. They're not like going off on a date. Like that's maybe, you know, 25% of the time, which is fine. But the passion is like, I can't imagine myself being in a shared space with a couple and going on a date with either of them and not at least acknowledging the partner. Like that just doesn't feel good to me.
Yeah, that makes a big difference what you're talking about, you know, being in a festival or in a workshop with one of your partner's other sweeties, and they're right there in your face. So if you don't have that
yeah.
connection, see how it would be a lot harder. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have, my primary partner has several other sweeties, and there's one sweetie that when he first started seeing her, I just couldn't make the connection with her that I wanted to make. It just kept falling flat, and he wasn't interested in not seeing her, and I went to a women's circle, and I heard a woman say that when she was in a similar situation, she realized it's not her job to determine what her partner's spiritual path is. You know, he may need to get to know this woman or become intimate with this woman for his own spiritual growth, and it's none of my business to determine that. So that, when I heard that, I was able to step back and just let him have that relationship. But what I did is I said, just on this relationship only, I'm going to request a don't ask, don't tell, because I keep getting so triggered, and I want to just go and heal on my own and not bring you into my trigger. I want to deal with it on my own with my friends and my support, and you go have your relationship with her. So I did just a case-by-case only basis where just that one woman is a don't ask, don't tell, whereas everyone else is like poly family to me. So what would you say to people who, when a woman has tried to connect with their metamor and they can't, they just don't like each other or whatever, what would you say to somebody in that situation?
I think what you did is beautiful, and you tried something new, and you could have gotten to, I think that was a beautiful example, and this is the pioneering part. This is the part where there is no right or wrong. There is no cookie cutter. all we can do is keep trying something new, and being and taking a risk, you know, and then cleaning up if that risk didn't feel good. You know, I've had to do that now a lot where I take a bigger risk and I take a bigger step and then I'm ready for, and I know that because of, you know, the amount of pain that I can be in after I make a decision or take a risk like that and how it feels after. And I have to say, you know, I thought I was ready for this and I'm actually not, and I need to take a few steps back. And it doesn't mean that it's a no. It just means there's a few more steps between me and getting there. And so I love what would you even call that? Like a micro or a very unique set of different relationship agreements around different types of partner where there is or isn't connection. And I think it's hard. You know, we're all trying to be authentic and to be in integrity, and it's hard when there's so many layers. I know my partner has some sweeties or lovers where I really want a connection, and sometimes I've tried a little too hard for there to be a connection, and there really authentically isn't one. And that's sad for me, because I think I'm like you, I'm more into the poly family paradigm. And so it's then my, you know, opportunity to do that work, to do the work that I need to do to face whatever challenges are coming up for me, so that he can continue to relate and open his heart the way that feels good for him and his work, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, we all crash and burn. And I think part of being successful in open relationship is to be able to manage the crashes and burns that inevitably happen.
It inevitably is the key word.
Okay, so I think this might be the last question about the video that I want to ask. Have you thought about the criticisms? I don't know if this is just big in the Bay Area right now in the sex positive community, but there's often criticisms about, oh, that's so heteronormative. So we have to address that issue of, like, being sensitive to queer people, gender fluid people who don't fit into the rigid gender roles of male and female. Have you thought about that criticism that you got?
Yeah. So I only got it in one place, which was on this private group that you mentioned. And yes, for me, it is a very big conversation topic, especially in the Bay Area. I noticed that conversation topic is almost exclusively brought up in the Bay. And my job when that comes up, for me, feels like to just shut up and listen, because I don't understand yet fully. And yes, like, that is more or less probably the paradigm I'm coming from. And I would love to be more conscious about the way that I speak and to be more inclusive. And I think I'm just at the beginning of that journey. And there's a lot of people out there who are probably feeling very similar to me. Like I said at the beginning, when I make these videos, they're very sloppy a lot of times. I'm not really, you know, it's coming from that place. It's coming from a very instinctual, animalistic place in me. Like, I think there was even like some trigger in my belly when I recorded that particular video. So a lot of my more like higher level vocabulary and thinking just completely goes out of the window when I'm in that grah place. And that's one of the pitfalls of the way that I film these passionate, sloppy videos. And I would love if I was able to continuously weave more inclusive vocabulary into all types of speech. And I can definitely always use more education because it's not something that is super alive for me or in the circles that I'm mostly find myself in. And I'm open to it. You know,
Yeah, and you have to be yourself, you know, as a teacher, an educator, and a coach, you have to be yourself to attract the people that connect with who you are, as opposed to, you know, being so politically correct that you lose who you are because you're being so sensitive about how it might land on other people. So I like your authenticity in your video. I don't think there's, I mean, you said pitfall, and maybe that's true, but I think that the authenticity in your video was really beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And I just want everyone to know who has that reflection for me, like, please, like, educate me. Please, like, let me know how I can speak that would be more inclusive. I'm very open, and obviously this is the stage and level that I'm operating at and coming from. And I'm not saying that I'm right, but I'm just saying that this is who I am.
Right. Good for you. That's honest. And, you know, controversy can be good for publicity.
It almost always is, actually.
I just got a controversial statement on my show, and I was kind of excited about it. Somebody was talking about the name of my show, Leading Edge Love, that it somehow implies that monogamous people are not leading edge, that they're less evolved. And so that was an interesting topic. I'll have to bring that up in another episode.
Well, that's really funny because I usually say the opposite. I usually say that very successfully monogamous people are more evolved because of how how away from our primal norm or urges that is.
Yeah, if somebody can still be in a loving relationship where people speak lovingly to each other most of the time and still desire sexual connection or some kind of intimate, passionate connection, who have been in relationship for decades, more power to them. I don't know how you do that, but please teach me.
Yes. For me, that's evolution. Yeah. For me, they are very much evolved. So, but it's beautiful. I learn so much from those couples who've been together for 30 years and still have that passion. I deeply respect and admire that, what they've done
exactly.
To get there.
Mm-hmm. So before we run out of time, I want to ask you about your work. So what happens in embodied intimacy?
Yeah, thanks. Well, embodied intimacy is very much was originally founded by my partner, and he is a somatic psychotherapist. So a lot of his work is on the embodiment, and that has become also a lot of our work. And our other biggest passion is on intimacy, and cultivating intimacy by going from the paradigm of, you know, in a lot of these workshops and retreats, you're always having to do something. And for us, intimacy is simply being together in the truth, in whatever's real in this moment. And so we have a variety of workshops and retreats, and we do things at festivals that all are focused around some form of getting embodied, and once embodied, then finding the intimacy that exists in this moment between these two particular people.
Mm-hmm.
And we, at the beginning when we started this business, there wasn't really anything about open relating that it was involved in it. That's always just been kind of a side passion that was more personal. And as I more and more started speaking up and speaking out about my journey, we realized what a need there was, and still what needs there are, as I'm sure you've realized, for someone to be talking about this. And in talking about it, we've also realized how applicable the things that work for people open relating are pretty universal.
Mm-hmm.
And who still
All
have
right.
passion and juice for each other, they also have a lot to teach us. So we're really like about intimacy and relating across the spectrum and just including everyone.
Exactly. Great.
Yeah.
Well, Rachel, I've really enjoyed having you on the show. You're very articulate, and you really know your stuff. So thank you for giving us this time. Before we go, I want to give people a chance to find you. Please tell our listeners how they can reach you, and I believe you also have some kind of gift or offer for our listeners. Are you there? Oops, I lost you, Rachel.
No.
Okay,
no,
I can hear you.
Hello.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay,
go
great.
Ahead.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
My personal page.
No, you're cutting out again.
Page with my. Okay.
Okay.
How
start
about
over.
Now.
Start over.
Okay.
You're good now. Go ahead. Start over. Okay.
So you can find me on my personal page at Rachel Rickards, or my partner and I's business where we post these videos and all of our events and retreats is at Embodied Intimacy. And that's just facebook.com/embodiedintimacy. And I'm happy to do a special offer. I'm co-producing a festival in the Bay Area happening next weekend called Soul Play, where there's a lot of community members who are practicing this kind of relating or doing very high level intimacy and communication work. If someone is interested in coming to that, we can happily give them like a 20% off discount if they type in. I think we'll use the code of your podcast, which is, what is it?
Leading Edge Love.
Leading Edge Love. Yes.
Right.
Or I'm also happy to do any consultations for free if there's someone who resonates and who needs support. I'm always happy to have a supportive conversation to see if we're a fit to work together.
Great. So, Rachel, can you clarify where would people put the code Leading Edge Love to get that discount? And the discount is for the weekend retreat?
It's going to be for Soul Play Festival.
And so the discount is for the registration for the festival?
That's correct.
Okay, and where would they put that code?
There'll be a discount code box on the ticket purchase page, and they can put the code in there.
And where would they find the registration for Soul Play?
If you go into Embodied Intimacy and click on events on Facebook, it'll be the first event at the top.
Perfect. Okay, got it. So we go to Facebook, we look for the Embodied Intimacy page on Facebook, and there they'll find the link for the Soul Play Festival, and there will be an obvious place to put a discount code in there, and you type in Leading Edge Love, and you get a 20% discount on the registration for the festival. That's very generous. Thank you so much.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, we're about out of time. I want to thank you again for your time, Rachel, and I wish you the best of luck with all of your work.
Thank you so much. It's really been really fun to have this conversation with you. I love these conversations, and I could kind of geek out on this forever.
Awesome. Okay, Rachel, take care. We'll see you later.
Bye.